Welcome to Real Time with WLP. My name is Angelina Brathwaite, and I have the pleasure of serving on the board. I will be your host for this episode, and it's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to our guest for today, Terry Drover. Terry is the Director General at Health Product Stewardess Association, a Canadian nonprofit that runs take-back programs for unwanted medications and used CHARPs. Before joining HPSA, Terry accumulated over 30 years of executive experience in the pharmaceutical industry, holding various decision-making roles for the pharmaceutical companies in North America, including Procter & Gamble, Apotex, Sandoz, and Wyeth Pharmaceuticals. Her breadth of experience spans healthcare, sales, marketing, regulatory affairs, government relations, and distribution. Today, Terry is going to speak to us about her career in pharma and how HPSA can support pharma goals. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you very much, Angelina. I'm looking forward to today's podcast.
So am I. You have such a breadth of experience. It's so impressive. And I'm just happy to be in your company. Terry, can you provide us with a broad overview of exactly what HPSA is?
So Health Product Stewardship Association, as you refer to it, HPSA, is a nonprofit. It's been around for about 22 years now, believe it or not. And we represent pharmaceutical manufacturers who have regulated obligations regarding their environmental stewardship of their products. So currently there's four provinces in Canada that have environmental regulations that require pharmaceutical manufacturers to steward their products right up until the end of life from a consumer point of view. So those things you have in your home, like unwanted Tylenol, expired Tylenol, medications that you haven't taken, or maybe you've had a changed medication. We provide a system that consumers can take it back to pharmacies and we'll dispose of it in an environmentally friendly way. We also do that for medical sharps that have been used in a consumer's home. So for diabetics or people who take injections of things like B12. So we ensure that they have an opportunity to have a sharps container and then bring it back to pharmacies. And we manage that program in four provinces, and that's about to be six provinces very shortly. So we're expanding rapidly in the next 3 years.
Excellent. Yeah, my dad, God bless him, he had diabetes complications. And I remember that disposable unit where they used to put the sharps in. Today, what I'm seeing on a lot of annual reports is companies' obligations to sustainability. Could you tell me a little bit about that, how you're working with the different pharma companies to ensure that they're meeting their objectives?
So it's interesting. In the number of years I've been in the pharmaceutical industry, in the last, I would say, 5 years, I've noticed a shift in the pharmaceutical company's intentional strategy towards maintaining sustainable practices within their operations. Many of which are regulated, so they really don't have a choice, but some of which aren't, and companies are taking it upon themselves to operate more sustainably. So we partner with our manufacturers to help them with their sustainability guidelines as well as their obligations. So we report annually to each province in which there's a regulation on their behalf with the amount of product we've collected in kilograms. And we've collected, I think, almost 5 million kilograms of medicine since our inception. That'll just give you an idea of how much volume is really out there in the consumer's home. So we help them fulfill their obligations. We act on their behalf from a regulated point of view. But we also work with them in a thought leadership role in helping them promote their own sustainability philosophy within their company. So, for example, Apotex has placed HPSA's take-back programs and instructions on their intranet for their own employees to engage with and remind them that you should be environmentally conscious with your medications and sharps at home. And here's a program that Apotex participates in that supports this sustainable practice. We're also working with a company like Sanofi, who's very anxious to know how they can promote the safe disposal of their medicines as part of their sustainability practices and obligations. So I'm seeing a shift of us trying to convince people to do this or manufacturers to do this to manufacturers coming to us and saying, can you help us promote sustainability within our organization and to our stakeholders like healthcare professionals and various stakeholder groups?
Thank you for sharing that. I know that even before this podcast, we talked about our own individual contributions and some of the things that we can do in the community. So you mentioned that Apotex has on their intranet to their employees how to discard sharps and things like that. What else would you say is important for the masses to recognize? Because we know that, you know, antibiotics is now, people are a little bit more resistant, there's infertility, things like that. So as an individual, what can I do or what can we do to contribute to a positive environment?
From an individual perspective, I mean, we do surveys every 2 years to see that, to gauge the knowledge of the consumer base about this take back program. And each time when someone says to me, well, what is it you do for a living? And I explain, they go, I didn't know there was such a program. So we know we have a challenge in reaching consumers. Right now, we're using pharmacies as our primary contact with consumers and hoping pharmacies remind consumers when they fill prescriptions, don't forget to bring this back. You're not going to use it, particularly things like opioids. Don't keep them in your home. Make sure you bring them back to us so we can keep you safe and the environment safe. So I promote even to my own pharmacies in the area. I visited some of them. I promote it to my friends and relatives. So I think once you're aware, to make other people aware of it and spread the word. Also with your children at home, educating them about, you know, it's one thing to put recyclables in the blue box, but it's also important to keep your medication safe and out of the reach of kids, but not to flush them down the toilet or put them in the garbage because it impacts the environment. And just education, word of mouth, we are really engaging more and more in the last 2 years with various stakeholder groups like Diabetes Canada, so we can leverage their association to reach diabetics to explain how the program works and ensure they're all knowledgeable about it. Various other stakeholder groups, like we've engaged with the Lung Association, helping educate patients. We're going to be attending some conferences this year, like lifestyle conferences, particularly around the elderly, because they tend to have many more medications at home, and right, helping recognize the importance of this. We also have participated in a conference from the OECD on the importance of pharmaceutical waste and the impact on the environment. And to your point, Angelina, antibiotics, hormones, mood modifying drugs, all these things in the wastewater have proven to impact aquatic species. So it's very important to realize that when you flush things down the toilet, right, water treatment facilities, they get rid of viruses and bacteria, or they're treated for certain things and they maybe add some fluoride, but they're not removing all the metabolites of the pharmaceutical. So the less that gets into our freshwater system, the better. We as Canadians should be proud that we have the largest source of fresh water in the world. And I'm very passionate about protecting it.
You know, what you say is so true, is just heightened that awareness. I wanted to switch gears a little bit and chat about your career, because it's been quite extensive and quite impressive. You have, prior to HBSA, spent most of your career in pharma in various roles and in various capacities. So you've seen a lot since the start of your career. Women weren't typically seen in the boardroom, as example. How did you manage to excel in those earlier years of your career?
That's a great question, and one that I reflected on since knowing I was going to be participating in this podcast, because sometimes you get on the hamster wheel and you take the time to reflect about where you're heading or where you came from. So I've taken quite a while just to reflect on my career, which was, as you've mentioned, it's been very eventful. And I'm trying to summarize why I think I was so successful, relatively speaking. I think I was naturally curious, and I think that's so important in any role, in any job, that you be curious about what you do, what the company does, how it matters. I asked a ton of questions, and I aligned myself quickly with influential people within the organization and those that I thought would mentor me, those that I thought could provide a foundation for better performance on my behalf. I worked hard on my network, as hard as I did on my job. And back in the day, we had Rolodexes. I still have my Rolodex. It's looking more like an obituary, but it's I had to keep it because it just reminded me of so many people that have been so influential in my life. But I was so proud of every extra card I put in there of a contact I'd made. And then I was very selective on those that I really nurtured, those that could not only just help me in my career, but people I thought I could help as well. And for example, just recently, I got a phone call from somebody that I hadn't heard from in a while and I'd worked with many years ago. And I knew that they were probably looking for their next opportunity because that's what you do when you haven't spoken to somebody. There's usually a reason to reach out. And sure enough,
right.
Mm-hmm. They're looking for a new opportunity. But they felt that they could reach out to me because of my network. And, you know, is there anything you can do to help? And I'm more than happy to do that. But I think curiosity, I was very passionate, always very passionate about what I did. And I always felt I had to make a difference. So I remember once before I got into pharma, I was a director of nursing at a cottage hospital in Newfoundland, and the staff went on strike. And so all of the management had to go in and do everything that everyone else was doing for a period of time. And the job they gave me was to make breakfast in the morning for, you know, a huge population of patients. And for 2 weeks, I went in every morning and buttered 200 pieces of toast and stirred 200 pots of porridge. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I need to be challenged. I need to be passionate. I need to feel what I'm doing is making a difference. Not that that wasn't making a difference. I was feeding people. But I thought this, I knew what it was that was going to motivate me. And it had to be something significant, something impactful, and something I could truly feel I could apply what I thought my true skills were. And cooking isn't one of them, I'll tell you. So.
Well, what you've shared, I feel, is really going to help our audience, especially those who are younger in their careers, because they're looking to individuals like yourself for that guidance, that mentorship, that coaching. And I loved what you say about how it matters and why it matters. And also the networking piece. Sometimes, you know, people feel like networking is, hi, I'm Angelina and you're Terry. Can you help me find a job or something like that? But not recognizing that there needs to be inputs because you have to establish trust in that relationship. And it sounds like you've been very successful in doing that in your career. What has been the biggest standout moment in your career? There's probably many of them, but is there something really special?
I think there'd be two that stand out. Well, maybe three. So I think completing my MBA, I was very proud of myself. I did that while I was working full time with a teenage daughter at home. So I almost lost my MBA, but I was proud that I managed to get through that.
Uh-huh.
Huge difference to my career path. Mm-hmm. I think the big moment for me is I accepted a position in New York with Procter & Gamble while I was working at a cottage hospital in Newfoundland. So you can imagine the cultural shift. I moved my family to a new country, to a new job. I was director of nursing and I went into research and development in pharmaceuticals in New York.
That's brave. Yeah, you really pivoted there. Very brave.
And I remember my mother, who was hadn't traveled much at that point. I said, I'm going to New York. She looked at my father. And of course, we grew up in a very small rural town where we had you know, hunting guns and lots of guns in her house. She goes, Ernie, go get her a gun. She needs something. She's going to New York. I don't think so. It's upstate New York, first of all. But that was a huge shock to me. But again, it speaks to my curiosity.
Right.
The other thing is you have to be willing to take a risk. Calculate it. Like I did a lot of sticky notes on the wall with pros and cons about that position. But in the end, I took a big leap of faith that I could do this job and that it would be a good move in my career to get out of, publicly funded healthcare and into a for-profit organization where there was a P&L and you were responsible much more financially for an organization. And I thought I could really benefit from that exposure. It was a huge transition. My kids were younger, so they just thought it was just an adventure. But simple things, Angelina, like my accent was so strong that people didn't understand me.
Are you serious? Really?
Absolutely. I came from a very small town in Newfoundland with a very unique accent, very Irish. Mm-hmm. So there were terms and words I would use that they had no idea what I was saying. So it took me weeks to slow my speech down and to realize which words were acceptable or they were recognizable. On top of that, the other big issue was they set me in an office the first day and there was a computer there. I had never been up close and personal with a computer in my life. And I remember thinking, did I lead anyone to believe I knew how to use this? I don't remember saying that. And I walked out to the executive assistant that was sitting outside my office, Debbie. I'm still in touch with her, and that's been years ago. And I said, Debbie, I have to tell you, I don't even know how to turn that on. And she said, don't worry. And she said, we're going to go buy you a computer. We're going to go buy you a computer. And in the evenings, I'll come to your house and I'll teach you how to use it. And I mean, I've had such kindness showed to me throughout my career. I've been very fortunate. And as I said, we are still in contact with one another. She was amazing. She basically taught me how to use a computer. So that was another big milestone in my career. I really enjoyed that experience. It really sort of boomeranged me into my next opportunity. And then the third big milestone in my career was running HPSA. So I'm the ultimate decision maker. And when I came on board, the weight of that, I did not underestimate the weight of that. The buck stops with me. And I had the total responsibility of this organization to move it forward and to make sure we were doing that in a strategic, prudent way. And I'm very content with saying that I think we've made huge strides in moving the organization forward. We have a very cohesive, passionate team. And I really tested my mettle with regards to my leadership skills. The ultimate leadership test is running an organization and being responsible for the direction completely of the organization. So I'm very happy. And I think I feel a sense of more self-awareness and confidence than I've ever felt. And unfortunately, that's at the end of my career. But I look back at the last two and a half years at this organization and look at what we've achieved as a team. And I'm so proud of the people I work with and of what we've been able to accomplish. And that's a big, important step, and probably the final step of my career. To be able to end it on such a positive note.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you're only as good as your team, right? No person is an island. My last question to you is for our listeners, especially those who are younger in their career, what advice would you have for them? I know it's a broad question.
So I'm very aware that when you first start out in your career, as I reflect, I was just glad to have my first job. I mean, literally a paycheck was my only motivator. I had a young family, a mortgage. I just wanted to make money. And it was almost a luxury to think that I actually liked my job. That was a bonus. So I understand, there's a practicality when you first start out that sometimes you take opportunities because of the money, because you have outside pressures, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you can, and you're patient, and currently it's a employee's market, make sure that you can commit that there's something in that position that attracts you from a passion point of view, and that you understand what it is you're doing to contribute to something. Because looking back, the fact that each job I held had meaning to me. So it wasn't just, I was going in, I was working my 8 hours and coming home, but I knew what I was working towards. I was contributing to something. So with that said, and the acknowledgement that sometimes it's okay to take a job for just sheer promotion and money, but be strategic when you're able and you find a little more breathing space in that part of your career where you can get more strategic about what your next move should be. I would say to remain curious, ask a lot of questions, and that's a great way to build your network. If you go to someone's office and say, "Can I have 10 minutes of your time? I'd really like to know what it is you do."
Right.
They talk about what they do, and you learn a lot, and then you started to build your network. They get to know you. You know a little bit more about the organization. So curiosity is so, so important. Also, build people up. Look for opportunities for people that need a hand. You can be actively looking for somebody that may be struggling and just offer them a hand. You never know, how impactful that may be. I've helped people's careers, and they have had no idea behind the scenes what I may be doing to promote them to others. I remember there was a lady I worked with in Montreal, and she really wanted a foreign assignment. She had a UK passport. She was a dual passport. She said, "I'd really like to have an opportunity." And I really rallied and supported her to the executive team and said, "This would be a great opportunity for her. You should think about her." She probably has no idea, but she did get the opportunity. And now I follow her on LinkedIn, and she's the head of some major pharmaceutical company. And it warms my heart every time I see how well she's doing. But I think you don't need to take credit for anything as long as you're really entrenched in helping others, and not just women. I mean, I've had some great male mentors as well. But building that network and making sure you even informally identify people that can mentor you. Sometimes they don't even know they're doing it. Doesn't have to be right. A formal engagement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And those people that you feel are influential in the organization that you think can help you, be curious, purposely set up time with them. And I think the final thing I would say to people who want to be in the pharma world and are just entering, don't be afraid to take risks or make mistakes.
Well, it certainly has been a pleasure getting to know you. You seem like a real good human being on this planet. I loved when you said build people up and offer them a hand. I don't think that happens enough, but it's apparent that with your goodness, you've received goodness. And for that, we're grateful. So in conclusion, I would just like to reiterate how much of an honor it was, Terry, to sit down with you for these few minutes. And I spoke with you, I think it was a couple of months, and I was very impacted by what it is that you do. So know that you're appreciated. And to our WLP listeners, make sure you visit our website to get a list of our previous podcasts. And Terry, if those companies want to reach out to HBSA, should they just Google the site, or should they reach out to you, or is there a different contact? How do you want it to?
It can be either or. They can find me on LinkedIn. This podcast, I'm sure there'll be contact information. We also have a website, healthstewart.ca, so they can reach out and see what the resources are there and how to contact somebody who will certainly get back to them. We'd be welcoming of anyone who wanted to find out more about what it is we do or partner with us in any way.
Thank you, Terry. And,
yes, thank you very much as well. I think the group should know that you and I, our paths have crossed in this industry because you're so well known in this industry. When I looked at the list of people on the board, I recognized your name. So I'm really happy to have had the opportunity to do this with you.
Yeah, it's been my honor. Thank you.